It's been a challenging year and a couple months for us. Number one, the pandemic. Number two, in the midst of the pandemic, we moved. So our entire agency moved in the midst of this pandemic. In addition, we changed electronic case management systems. So we've had quite a bit of changes within the agency. So first of all, what the pandemic's done basically, just because of all this societal changes and mental health issues, we've seen, a huge increase in the number of cases over the past year and a few months. Mainly the cases related to overdose fatalities and homicides. Those have been the major causes of our increase in cases. The move happened in May of 2020 and took us a good 4 to 5 weeks. And we had to do it in stages to move everyone over to the new site and then start ramping all the systems up. So the effect of all this has been effects on mental health of the staff.
How big is your staff?
46 or 47 staff members on board. So we've had some issues with burnout, some issues with mental health, just related to some of the cases that we got.
If you could, this is your chance to make the case, like how many more folks do you need? And what kind of, you know, do you need more investigators? You need, like, what do you need to be able to handle what you've encountered and endured here for the last 15 months?
We pretty much need staff in every department at this point. We desperately need more morgue techs, and those are the folks who work in the back and assist the doctors and also admit and release the decedents. So we've gotten quite a few complaints from funeral homes because we just, you know, sometimes you should be here on a day when there's a line of funeral home vans like going from the street down, you know, into the building waiting.
They're waiting for your staff.
We only have one person who releases.
For people who don't know, what goes into before a body can go to the funeral home, what goes into that?
So, I mean, you have to verify that the correct decedent is going to the correct funeral home. Means looking at tags on the decedent, means looking at the computer. It means looking at the paperwork that the funeral home has. So, I mean, it's a little process there. And of course, it means going into the cooler to remove the decedents from where they are in the cooler. And we have three coolers. So
can you give me some more examples? Again, like the vans from the funeral home is waiting outside. Like what other, you know, scenes or things that are noticeably different, again, in the past year, a little over a year?
You know, just returning phone calls is really delayed. It's by the investigators, for example. So we have 10 in all, and those 10 include two who are really, you know, the in charge, you know, the chief and the assistant chief. But they do have to go out to scenes at times because there's no one else. So the investigators will take phone calls from the police. They'll try and do the identification for the Doe cases, and they work with the hospitals. For example, if a hospital calls and said, you know, this decedent is ready for you to pick up, sometimes, many times, I'm going to say many times, our investigators are out in the field. They can't even call the transport company to go pick up the decedent at the hospital. That may be delayed because they just can't make the call, number one. And number two, if it happens in the middle of the night, we don't have anyone to admit decedents at night. So the investigator has to do both investigations and admit
in the morning
if someone comes in overnight.
Okay.
And if they're out on back-to-back scenes, they can't do the admit, which means those decedents who are in the hospital may have to wait 8 hours, 10 hours, even longer sometimes for the next morning when we can admit that person.
Okay.
So.
And I've read some of the tweets that you put out there that were, you know, filled with emotion. You know, we have, two young men here on our table, and, you know, where's the leadership? And there's so much violence in our city. So can you talk about, you know, why you tweeted those things and what your frustration is?
I just, you know, I see other cities that are seeing the same thing, but they're acting a lot quicker. They've made, you know, the leadership has put together a plan, coordinated plan to deal with the increased violence. Recently, it was the one I saw recently was DC, and they opened up an office of violence prevention with a lead. I believe that person was in law enforcement. I don't remember what, you know, that person did before, but someone involved in law enforcement violence to lead the Office of Violence Prevention. And I think without a coordinated plan that's rapidly put together and has a clear and consistent plan, we're going to see the same. We continue to see. So I know, you know, and I have seen recently where city council is doing these town halls, these virtual town halls on violence prevention and bringing in outsiders to speak on what they're doing in their towns and cities to prevent violence, which is great.
The tweets are public, so I have to ask. But I mean, when you say we need better leadership, are we talking about the mayor, city hall, the police, health officials, all the above? Who are you referring to?
It's more of a spurring, kind of lighting a fire.
Okay.
To say, you know.
Do you feel helpless in your position?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
My agency doesn't, you know, have much in the way of powers to change anything. But we do have the knowledge of what is going on. So.
Why do you care so much? Why does this matter to you so much? I'm sure you could have other opportunities in the medical field, but why do you continue being in the corner? And why is there so much, it seems very personal, especially again, whether you're talking in the tweets that, again, we need to do more. And why is it like that for you?
Well, first of all, I grew up in South Bronx. I mean, you know, South Bronx, poor, blah, blah, blah. And then I ended up in this 6-year BSMD program. And the mission of that program, which I have the honor, I was asked to speak to a lot of the students coming up in March, but the mission of that program is to train physicians to work with underserved communities. And basically most of my career has been working in clinics, you know, that work with underserved, work in lower socioeconomic areas, etc. And then I ended up here and realized how this office really is a lightning rod. You know, you can really see what's going on in the community by the deaths that are occurring here. And there are articles out there that you can read, you know, that kind of, you know, delineate this even more, you know, that coroner offices really and medical examiner offices really can be part of prevention, because what they're seeing is the lightning rod, is, you know, can tell you what's going on, the ills of the society, the mm-hmm. ills of that area. And when you know what's going on, then you can look at it and say, hey, well, then this needs to change, or that needs to change, or we need to bring this in, or we need to address this.